Hello and welcome to the Girl Fuel Podcast. My name is Haley. I'm a registered dietitian and nutrition coach here to help you along your health and fitness journey by providing evidence and experience-based knowledge and full transparency. We have a lot to chat about today, so let's dive in. I am joined by my friend and colleague, Julia, who is also a registered dietitian and health coach. Julia's business is called JFay Fitness, and we'll make sure that you guys get her Instagram in the show notes so that you can follow her because her content is amazing. She is a wealth of knowledge. She specializes in weight loss resistance and women's hormone health. You know, with Julia's background being in eating disorder and having recovered from that, she is in a great place to be able to help women lose weight, heal their hormones, and feel confident without restriction. And I feel like, you know, your podcast and your content do a really great job of showing that. So today we are going to talk all things hormonal imbalances, specifically sex hormones. We're going to talk a lot about periods today. And Julia, you know, I would love to know what makes you so passionate about talking to women about their hormone health.
Yeah. So this specifically hormone health started more when I was getting my dietetics degree. So as you've mentioned, like I did have a background of eating disorders and that actually caused me to have HA, which is hypothalamic amenorrhea. For those who don't know, basically the loss of your period. And I was told if I ever wanted kids in the future that I needed to make change. And that was my light bulb moment. That was my aha moment. And I remember my stomach sinking because I'm somebody who does want a decent amount of kids. You know, I want like 3-4 kids. And so being told that, I was like, holy shit. No, like this cannot be happening. I do want kids. I want a family. That's like always been in my future. And so that was my like, okay, this is serious. This is way more serious than I thought it would be. And like even going into that appointment with my doctor, I was like, I'm all fine and dandy. This is just a checkup, you know? And then I got that news and I was like, oh my God. So the eating disorder is what sparked me becoming a dietitian in the first place. And then as I was going through my degree, I had, you know, we have to take a lot of internship hours. One of my internships was an eating disorder private practice. I really loved that. And then we had a thesis assignment for our graduation. So that was like a really, really big assignment to like for our last semester of grad school. And it had to be like tons of research, all this stuff. And they were like, you can choose any topic you want. And I was like, okay, I hate when professors say that because there's so many things that I would talk about. And like, I'd rather just be a little bit more specific. But at this time, I was thinking more and more about female hormone health. I was reading books about it. And so I was really interested in it. So I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do my thesis on. And ever since doing my thesis, which was more specifically on birth control effects on female hormones, I fell in love with it. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I just love talking about birth control, hormonal health, balancing hormones, coming off of birth control, like all the things. I'm now getting more into fertility and doing some CEUs for my degree with pre-postnatal care. So I'm going that route as well. But ever since then, I was like, I love talking about female hormones and all things that involve it.
That is really cool. I've never heard you explain your story like that before. So I appreciate you sharing that. And we're going to dive into a lot of different rabbit holes today. But a big one or a big goal of this episode is to help you kind of understand what hormonal balance means and understand that that is going to look different for each one of us, depending on so many different variables from genetics to age to lifestyle. And a lot of what we see now, unfortunately, is overuse of birth control, prolonged use for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I was on it for over 10, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of us out there were in similar boats. So we're here to help you understand, you know, what should your cycle actually look and feel like? What are some maybe red flags to look for that might tell you that something is off? And how can you go about advocating for yourself in terms of, you know, what tests should you order? How can you manage different symptoms? And we're really going to pick Julia's brain on all things hormones and fertility. So Julia, I'd love for you to kind of kick us off with what is a normal cycle? And I'm going kind of out of order here on my questions, but what is normal? You know, tell me all that you can tell me about, you know, length. What should we expect when we're talking about getting our period? Bring us back to high school health class.
Yes, high school health class, where they like just touch the surface of it and they really don't prepare women for their cycle. They just kind of like abstain from sex, you'll bleed, and that's fine. And that's like it. Like, I honestly, when I think back to my high school health class, I can't remember talking about periods at all. It was more just like about sex and like how to have safe sex, that kind of talk, but nothing really about, I cannot remember one conversation about a period in high school, which is just crazy because it happens to like every female. And like, that's a really big part of our lives and also dictates a really big part of our health. Like, women's periods are now shown as a fifth vital sign. And like, that just shows the importance of a period and having regular periods. So what a normal cycle is in terms of length. And when I say cycle length, because people get this confused, I'm not talking about just like your bleeding length. I'm talking about the whole cycle, including your follicular, ovulatory, luteal, menstrual phases. So all four phases, that's what I mean by length, not just the length you're bleeding. Sometimes I say like, my cycle was 33 days long. And they're like, what? You were bleeding for 33 days? No, I mean like the actual length of your whole cycle. So a normal cycle is considered anywhere from like 23 to 35 days. On average, it'll be 28, 29 days long. And there is, it can vary in between that. So it's not like if you had one period that's 28 days long, it has to always be 28 days long. That's not true. It can vary, you know, plus or minus 4 or 5 days and still be considered normal. So like one cycle might be 28 days long and another might be 33, and you're still within that normal range. And then as far as, you know, we'll get into other kinds of cycles, like short, heavy, long cycles. But I also, before I dive into like that kind of stuff, I want to just talk about spotting too, because this is something that a lot of people ask me about actually, and they're like, hey, I had spotting here. Why is this happening? So there is regular, like normal spotting as well. So what's considered normal with spotting, and spotting, by the way, is basically a light period where you don't necessarily have to use a pad or a tampon, but there is some bloody discharge happening. Might be that little brown discharge. If you know, you know. But what's considered normal with spotting is 1 to 2 days before, 1 to 2 days after your period, or you might see some spotting around ovulation. That is also normal to experience. What's not normal with spotting, if it's 3+ days before or after your period, like mid-cycle spotting, not necessarily normal. So lengthwise, that's what's considered normal. That's what's considered normal with spotting as well.
Awesome. That was a great description because, like you mentioned, we're not taught any of this. We're just told, you know, at some point you're going to bleed. I honestly remember this moment so vividly. There was a moment when I must have been in like junior high, and my parents were divorced. So we had like dad's house and mom's house, right? And I was at my dad's house and I was just like in my room doing whatever. And my dad comes in and he puts this like Learn Your Body book on my bed. And I was like freaking mortified. I think I was like, Dad, what the heck? Why are you giving this to me? Oh my God, that's disgusting. But at a certain point, you know, I would have friends over and we would be like, should we look at it? And we would like look at it. And I did use it and learn a good amount about it. So that's where, you know, I'm curious if you're listening, like, how did you learn about what a period is? I want to hear how different women came up to the experience of having their first period, right? But it is important to understand the different phases. And I feel like another like common misconception is that you can get pregnant throughout your entire cycle. So let's debunk that one for them.
Yeah, that is a really common misconception that they're like, oh my God, every single day of my entire life, I can get pregnant, which is not necessarily true. You really can only get pregnant like 5 days out of your cycle. This is where like tracking your cycle becomes really handy. Now, if you're on birth control, obviously, you're not going to be really tracking it. You have pills that kind of quote unquote track it anyway. You're not really ovulating on birth control regardless. So you're not really at risk if you're on hormonal birth control. But if you're not on hormonal birth control, I highly recommend starting to track your cycle because it really is only like a 5-day time frame. So when you are ovulating, that's obviously your time of fertility. And so that can be from like the day you ovulate, it can be anywhere from like 2 days before to 2 days after-ish when you ovulate. That's because sperm can live inside females for up to 5 days before they die off. Now, eggs don't last that long. Obviously, they just kind of travel down and then you start to bleed. But sperm can live for a few days. And so that's why where you get like that 5, sometimes 6 day window. But that's really it. Other than that, once, you know, your egg travels, if it's implanted and obviously it's not fertilized, then you start that whole process going into your luteal phase where you shed your lining and you bleed and then it starts all over again. So it's really just that 5, 6 day phase. And again, tracking your cycle using BBT, cervical mucus, LH test strips, like those are really good indicators of when your ovulation day is supposed to be so that you can know, am I more at risk or am I pretty much okay?
Exactly. And that's where, you know, as women more and more right now, I feel like are coming off of birth control and realizing how many negative things can come from it. It's very important to just give your body some time to level out afterwards. And, you know, I've done podcasts in the past about how to get your period back post birth control. So we won't really go into that today. But once you get yourself leveled out and you can actually start tracking, you know, where you're at in your cycle and differentiating follicular versus luteal, that's where all you really have to do is be extra careful when you're ovulating, whatever that means to you. This is not medical advice. Talk to your partner, but you get the idea. So, Julia, what are some common telltale signs that hormonal imbalances are happening?
Yeah, this is a big one because I feel like so many women, almost like you can make so many memes out of like symptoms with females. And there's been so many memes that have been made, like all the memes about females on their period and like the husband has to like be careful around them and stuff. Like if you're a raging bitch, that's not normal. You need to get that figured out. But some other telltale signs that you might have in a hormonal imbalance are things like chronic fatigue, brain fog. That's a big one. Painful menstrual cramps. And when I'm talking painful, I mean like you're popping over the counter pills a couple times a day just to get through the day. If you're bedridden and you're like, I cannot move, I don't want to think about work, like that kind of painful, that's not normal. If you're having that moderate to extreme PMS, like I said, like if you're having really big mood swings and it's like extreme mood swings where you're feeling really good and then like an hour later you're hysterically crying, that's also not normal. If you have really high anxiety, if you have really low libido, if you're gaining weight pretty rapidly, insomnia, of course, infertility can be a sign, obviously, of a hormonal imbalance, a loss of period. Again, that one's pretty obvious because you're not having a period. That means things are not working as they should. Higher inflammation, puffiness, water retention, all those can be signs. Of course, I'm getting a call. But those can all be signs. And I think the most confusing part is that these signs can overlap with other symptoms. It doesn't just mean that you have a hormonal imbalance. So that's where, and we'll talk about like getting tests done and figuring that out further can come in handy. But those are like your main signs of hormonal imbalances.
Yes, definitely. And it'll vary. I've seen in practice and, you know, with myself over the years, there are times where, you know, you'll have one hellish period. Right. And that doesn't mean you have a hormonal imbalance. Usually I'll tell my clients, especially if they're newer and I haven't seen a full cycle from them yet, I'm like, hey, if this is one off, like we want to know that before we spend money on testing or supplements or anything like that. So I'm like, hey, this doesn't happen regularly. Like, let's see how you do on your next cycle. And then we'll look at other variables because there are a lot of just basic lifestyle variables that can change the severity of your cycle from month to month. Like stress. I've definitely had months where my sleep was kind of shitty because I was stressed. I was anxious more just with life happening. Maybe food quality not being as great, which happens to all of us. These are small things that can actually impact your cycle pretty majorly. So that's where, you know, if you're someone and you're like, I just had one cycle that was way too long and this has never happened before. It's like, okay, let's just take a step back and assess, well, what could be causing this? And then don't drive yourself crazy. Just try to get back to your normal and make some healthy changes if you need to and just kind of wait it out. But when we see this chronic issue, and to me, chronic is any more than like 2 months, right? With when it comes to like an irregularity with a whole cycle, because we have to, you know, go through the course of the month to see what's really happening. But what is kind of the first step that you would take with your clients if you are thinking hormones are wacky? What kind of testing do you usually go for?
Yeah. So kind of like you said, first thing that I do is look for signs and symptoms. Unless a client comes to me and they fill out the questionnaire and they check every single box of like having a hormonal imbalance. And they're like, really, they're like, I do everything perfectly to the T. My stress is great. Everything's great. And they're checking all those boxes. Maybe I'll start with labs with them, but typically I won't. I'll typically look for the signs and symptoms first, see what they're experiencing, and just go through their lifestyle habits and see, could it just be something that's going on within their own lifestyle habits that's causing this? So things like stress management, stress is directly related to our hormones, kind of suppresses our sex hormones. So if you have chronic high stress, that could be one of the reasons why you're experiencing the things that you are. So making sure that that's under control, sleep hygiene, and as well as, you know, quality and the hours of your sleep is very important as well. If you're pooping regularly, what's going on digestion-wise, like that has significant impact on your hormones, as well as just your overall like nutrient habits as well. What is your nutrition like? I usually do a nutrition audit for my clients the first week and see how are your habits. Are you eating more nutrient-dense foods? Are you eating more processed foods? Do we have to switch some things nutrition-wise? And then also in terms of training, are you over-exercising? Are you exercising at all? What's going on with overall training habits as well? So that's where I will always start, is looking at their overall lifestyle factors and seeing where they can improve those. And I'll always work on that first. Then, of course, if all of those check out and you're like, everything's good, they're, like I said, doing everything to the T, they're getting their hours of sleep, their stress is minimal, all looks great lifestyle-wise, then that's where I would go into getting some lab work done. So you can do a couple different things. So one, you can do serum labs or blood work and get that done. With serum labs, I would do things like your full sex hormones, so estradiol, progesterone, FSH, LH, DHEA, testosterone, all sex hormones. I would also do a full blood panel, so CBC, lipids, metabolic panels. I would test for your thyroid. A lot of people just do basic thyroid. So if you are checking for hormonal imbalances, make sure you ask for a comprehensive thyroid panel, including TSH, T3, T4, free T3, free T4, TPO antibodies, all the things. I also would suggest doing a cortisol test. Now, serum cortisol usually is just a 1 point cortisol test. I prefer a 4 point cortisol test where it shows your trend of cortisol over the course of the day, because naturally our cortisol should rise and drop throughout the day. So I'd prefer a more comprehensive cortisol test, but at least a serum can give you a basic understanding on, you know, if it's high, if it's regular. And I would also do vitamin D as well, because deficiency in vitamin D can cause things like low estrogen, low thyroid, insulin resistance. So that can have an effect on your hormones as well. So those are the tests that I would do for serum labs. What I do with my clients is Dutch tests. So this is just an at-home urine test where you can just, you get the test at home, you do your samples of urine, you send it in, and then the test results get sent to you. So you don't have to like go anywhere and do anything. But this is a little bit more comprehensive, especially there's a couple different kinds of Dutch tests. I like the Dutch Complete, but this has pretty much everything in the serum labs that I mentioned and more. So it has your estrogen and all the metabolites. It has your progesterone and all the metabolites. It also shows detox pathways. So the Dutch uses phase 1, which is hydroxylation, phase 2, methylation, which can show how your estrogen is being detoxified or broken down in your body. Is it toxic? Is it not? So I love that feature with the Dutch test. It also shows testosterone, DHEA, metabolites. It does adrenals, where it has that free cortisol and cortisone. So it does have that 4 point cortisol test that I was mentioning. So it can tell you the trend over time. Then it also does things like organic acid panels, where it can show oxidative stress, your gut health markers, things like that. So it just is a little bit more comprehensive. So that's one that I love to do. So that's some labs that you can get done. First, of course, do all of your lifestyle factors. Make sure that they are in check before doing labs, unless you know that everything is great and dandy, and then maybe start with labs. Also keep in mind too, that sometimes serum labs, blood samples can show quote unquote normal ranges based on medical ranges, but they still might not be optimal in terms of functional ranges. So that's where, you know, working with someone like a coach can help understanding. I'm sure people who are listening to this have gone to the doctor and like, something is wrong. They get their labs back and it's like, everything's normal. And your doctor just sends you on the way. Yeah, it might show normal on the medical range, but maybe not so much functional. So also keep that in mind as well.
Great. That was an awesome explanation. And is there a specific time of the month that we should think about running our hormones?
Yeah, I always suggest going between days 19 and 22 of your cycle. Just based on how your hormones are fluctuating, that would be a more optimal time to get them done.
I agree with that. I tell people the same thing. And if you do have an irregular cycle, if you're not getting a cycle at all, it doesn't really matter when you get them run. If your cycle lengths are, you know, longer or shorter, you would just kind of add and subtract a couple of days in order to figure out what that window is for you. But again, you know, at the end of the day, testing is usually going to be very, very helpful once we've even identified that the hormones are the issue. And I like how you tied in, you know, are you pooping? How is your gut? Because I always bring it back to the gut, but the gut is the center of everything. So it's like, if you're not going to the bathroom, we're going to have that buildup of estrogen. And that alone is going to lead to these PMS symptoms, which we'll talk about that next. So, you know, Julia, we get the labs done and maybe we find some irregularities. What are some common causes of the menstrual symptoms that you've talked about from, you know, a hormonal standpoint?
Yeah, so there could be a ton of different causes. So for example, like perimenopause can be a cause of abnormal cycles and abnormal symptoms that you're experiencing just because your hormones are changing at that point. So that could be one. Things like PCOS can cause hormonal imbalances as well. Endometriosis, that can be one. Thyroid disorders, since the thyroid modulates your metabolism and the development also of the ovaries, your uterus, placental tissue, all of those tissues, it does help modulate that. And so therefore, if you are hypo or hyperthyroid, that can influence fertility. It can cause infertility. So that's one that can obviously cause some imbalances. Autoimmune disorders, Hashimoto's, type 1 diabetes, these can cause hormonal disruptions. Like I said, PCOS and overall lifestyle habits. So things like skipping meals, dieting for way too long, high stress, having coffee on an empty stomach, because this raises our cortisol or our stress hormone, which can suppress the surge of our LH hormone, which is necessary for ovulation, leading to anovulatory cycles, endocrine disruptors. So just overall like lifestyle things can also impact or be a cause of those hormonal symptoms that you're experiencing.
Definitely. And I always, you know, say your cycle can scare easily, meaning basically everything that Julia listed that impacts your cycle is causing stress on your body, whether it's internal or external, or usually a mix of both. When we have that stress on the body, it, you know, causes that cascade with the cortisol and the adrenaline and everything, and that blunts hormone production. So a common thing that I'll see a lot is really, really low progesterone, which that alone can cause cycle irregularity, being off more often than not. I feel like we'd see longer cycles with that, because that ovulation is not happening when it should, in addition to heavy amounts of PMS, right? We need estrogen, we love estrogen, but when progesterone is low, we become relatively estrogen dominant, right? And that is kind of like a buzzy thing for people to talk about, estrogen dominance, but it is a thing. It is a thing that is unfortunately very, very common, especially in women that do come off of birth control. So that's where, you know, making sure that you're supporting all of your body's systems, especially your detox systems, your gut, your digestion, your liver, is going to be very, very important in getting your periods back to normalcy. A lot of, you know, changing your hormone levels goes outside of just looking at your hormones, like Julia mentioned, with getting that deeper assessment.
Definitely.
And Julia, what strategies have you found either personally or in practice have been effective for some of your clients to manage PMS while you're working on healing the cause?
Yeah, you mean like painful periods, all that kind of stuff?
Yes, all of the fun.
So this is where, as a registered dietitian, I like to take a more natural approach, right? So when I said, if you're just popping over the counter medication all the time to get through a painful period, we don't necessarily want that, because that in turn can also cause more harm to your hormones by doing things like that. So we want to take a more natural approach to helping with your PMS symptoms so that you're not also hurting them in the same at the same time. So things that I love to do for managing PMS. Number one, great one, is heating pad. This the heat from a heating pad helps to promote blood flow. It helps to increase your circulation, and it just overall relaxes your muscles. So if you are experiencing some pain, I highly recommend using a heating pad. You can even use that before you even get your period, like late luteal phase, to help again with that blood flow circulation, especially in the wintertime when like you're always, I don't know, I'm always cold. And so I like to use it even before I even get it, just to help that area, increase the circulation, relax your muscles. So that's number one. Number two, raspberry leaf tea. I sip on this all the time, again, late luteal into when I'm starting to bleed. This also helps with your uterine muscles. It helps to reduce pain. Literally on the package, if you get raspberry leaf tea, actually, I don't know if it's all raspberry leaf tea, but the brand I use, which I cannot think of at the moment right now, but it literally says like helps support PMS symptoms. And it's like, that's like what it's made to do, but it does help. So I highly recommend sipping on some tea. Another kind of going supplement tea there is ginger. I even like ginger supplement more than tea in terms of PMS symptoms, especially with pain. So ginger, especially in the form of supplement, helps to reduce prostaglandins. It helps to relax our muscles. It helps pain modulation. And actually, ginger has been said to be as effective as NSAIDs in the pill form. So if you are somebody who wants to pop pills like Tylenol, Advil, because you're just in pain, maybe switch over to something more natural like a ginger supplement, because it is shown to be as effective. So that is a really great one if you're experiencing pain. Another one I love is castor oil packs. This also helps to increase circulation. It also helps to decrease inflammatory levels and helps aid in liver detox, which can help with like the root cause, like you said, the estrogen dominance, where you're having more excess estrogen. Castor oil packs can help with that liver detox and kind of flush that out, so you're not even experiencing as bad PMS. So that not only helps PMS at, you know, before your period, but can help it long term not have any more PMS future. Treat yourself. Other things that I think are important are coffee after food. Coffee does increase our cortisol levels, which can cause more inflammation in the body, which can cause worse PMS. It also elevates your blood sugar, which also causes hormonal imbalances and worse PMS. So try to not have coffee on an empty stomach as much as possible. You can have it with food. If you just like to have coffee first thing, at least have something small with it to help with that. Another big one we have already mentioned is lowering your stress. Stress directly impacts hormones. Again, stress is in turn your cortisol, and that high response can have negative effects on your hormones. So obviously managing your stress, lowering your stress can lower your cortisol response and also help your body function more optimally. Now, it is good to note that we need some stress. Like, we do want stress responses in the body, but chronic high elevated stress levels, not so great. So try to manage that as much as possible. And the last one is just overall supporting your liver detox. So like we've already mentioned, this helps to excrete excess hormones so that they don't get recirculated and cause that higher amount in the body. And this can also be a cause of major PMS. So as long as you are supporting your liver detox, helping to excrete any excess hormones before they circulate back, that can also help with your PMS.
Those are super, super helpful. I'm going to have to buy the raspberry tea for this cycle. I feel like I've used it just like randomly, but not like religiously enough to notice a difference. The heating pad though, I do the same thing. I am actually sitting on my heating pad right now, because I get cold, but also I've noticed better recovery from like my leg days, which makes sense with the blood flow and like I get back pain. So it helps with that. But especially going into your cycle, especially if you're someone that gets really crampy, it can be a game changer. But those were all so helpful. I noticed the same thing with the ginger as far as the capsule, the pill form versus the tea bag. I mean, it's just a higher dose. You can also get like the powdered ginger, like Trader Joe's has one. I don't know if you've tried it. The taste is okay. It's very gingery, but that's a pretty, pretty high dose. If you just dump the pack in water, that's another option, but the pill form is always usually the easiest. And we know that nutrition plays a major role in balancing your hormones, in just supporting your body and supporting overall fertility. So what are some, you know, non-negotiables when it comes to nutrition that you make sure your clients are paying attention to support their hormone health?
Yeah. So food is medicine, right? There is that saying for a reason, and food can either help you or harm you, right? If you are having nutrient dense foods more often, odds are it's going to help you. If you're not, if you're somebody who does eat out a lot, has more processed foods, packaged foods, that can harm you. So food is great, but we want to be careful in what we're putting into our body so that we are actually helping our body, not harming our body. And proper food helps to support your liver detox. It helps to balance your blood sugar. It helps to lower inflammation, supports your gut health. It helps to produce and secrete hormones. So like food really is such a key role in your overall hormone health. And it can directly or indirectly impact your hormones. So for example, if you are having increased refined carbs, if you are having more saturated or trans fats, if you have decreased fiber and you're just not getting a lot throughout the day, this can directly impact, let's say, cortisol. So it can regulate cortisol, which can impact your sex hormones. So that's a way that it directly impacts hormones. Indirectly, for example, if you have systemic inflammation, if, you know, depending on the amount of visceral fat, which is the fat around your abdominals, the level of glucose tolerance you have, that all can indirectly impact your hormones, but also can be helped by nutrition. So what foods I always have my clients focus on are, number one, cruciferous veggies. These are things like broccoli, kale, cauliflower. These help with liver detox. So it's a great one to incorporate. I actually literally at the time that we're recording this just posted something about broccoli on like a reaction video about broccoli. There's just a lot of things on social media that I'm just like, don't listen to. Cruciferous vegetables are great and definitely support hormonal health. Second thing is healthy fats. Healthy fats are literally like the backbone of our hormones. They make up our hormones in our body. So you definitely want to have a lot of that. I know that a lot of people think that fat makes you fat. There's been like that saying in the past, and it's not true. Really, it's, you know, calories depict weight and body fat, and if you're gaining, losing. But healthy fats, like I said, are literally the backbone of our hormones. We need those. So making sure that we're getting enough of those. So avocado, olive oil, nuts, seeds, all of those great, great things. Want to also focus on protein at every meal. This one's pretty standard for overall health, but also with hormonal health. So, you know, all your meats, protein, chicken, turkey, red meats. Yes, the whole thing with inflammatory, like, is red meat inflammatory? I don't know. I still include it because there is a lot of great nutrients within red meats. So protein at every meal. Fruit, specifically ones high in antioxidants like berries, maybe lower glycemic if you need that, if you have insulin troubles going on. Whole grain carbs, fish, shellfish, especially fatty fish like salmon, sardines, those ones are great for hormones. And I also want to touch on like food, for lack of a better term, rules. Obviously, I don't love the term food rules, but food, quote unquote, rules to actually follow. One, don't skip meals. We do not want to skip meals. This can impact our blood sugar, impacts our hormones. So don't do that. Have your breakfast. You'll be okay not doing intermittent fasting, especially for somebody who is trying to balance your hormones. You really don't want to intermittent fast. You don't want to skip meals. Two, limit your refined carbs. I think we know this, but it is helpful to limit refined carbs, saturated trans fats, sugary sweetened beverages. Keep those to a minimum. Of course, you don't need to totally cut them out, but try to limit those as much as possible. Coffee after meal, we already explained that one. And I also do love the idea of adopting more of a Mediterranean diet. I mean, Western diets are higher in saturated trans fats, refined carbs, those sugary sweetened beverages, just naturally. That's part of a Western diet. So I do often have my clients focus more Mediterranean style diet, where they're focusing on lean proteins, fatty fish, nuts, seeds, healthy fats, fruits, vegetables, those kinds of things.
Definitely. And like you mentioned, it's a balance. You know, you don't have to completely avoid certain foods unless, of course, they're giving you trouble with your belly or anything else. But it really is just finding that balance that feels good for you. But the more whole foods that you can eat while trying to balance your hormones or while just trying to be a healthy human, the better, right? And that may not look the same every week or every month. But if on average, you know, you can fill your plates with, you know, 80 to 90% of those whole foods that Julia listed. And there are so many more that we haven't even talked about because, you know, there are too many vegetables to list. But if you're able to fill 80 to 90% of your plate with those things, and if you are in a situation where, you know, you're really struggling with your hormonal health, you're really struggling with your symptoms, hopefully at this point you've reached out to a practitioner, but there may be temporary periods where, I don't know about you, Julia, but I'll have clients purposefully avoid things like alcohol or heavy amounts of gluten and those fried processed foods for periods of time. And it's like, hey, for right now, like, let's keep these at the bare minimum. Once we get you feeling more optimal, sure, you know, 10% of your diet throughout the course of your week, your month, like, that's totally fine. Have you found doing things like that helpful?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the key there is that it doesn't have to be long term and it's more just temporary, but it really can make the difference with them. And then we can introduce those foods back in. And as long as they're not causing issues, you can keep those foods back in. But for short term, sometimes it really is the catalyst to improving your hormonal health and getting them a bit more balanced again.
For sure. And then just really loading your body with the nutrients that it needs. And that's where addressing all blood work instead of just your hormones can be really helpful, because a lot of women, especially those of us who have been on birth control or those of us that do have symptoms in general, we may see vitamin and mineral deficiencies. Julie already mentioned that vitamin D is a big one. That is probably the most common deficiency that I'll see in blood work, but B vitamins are another one that oftentimes we're deficient in them, more so related to probably an absorption issue more than anything, just because it's pretty easy for us to get B vitamins, especially if you take a general multivitamin, they're going to be in there, but there are certain people that lack them. Iron's another one that we can see is low in a lot of females, especially with a birth control history, because we have to remember that yes, food is fuel, food is energy, but what is food? Food has nutrients, food has specific vitamins, minerals, cofactors, et cetera, that play specific roles in our hormone regulation, right? Like magnesium is a great example of a mineral that impacts quite literally every system in your body. So if you're not getting enough magnesium through your diet, which most people don't because it's hard to, that alone could cause severity in symptoms when it comes to your period. So that's where just, you know, assessing as a whole kind of where you're at now and what small things you can change over time are going to be helpful instead of thinking, okay, you know, I need to throw out the window everything I've ever done and automatically switch to this one approach. I think we both, you know, coach people lifestyle first, find a sustainable way instead of, like we were talking about earlier, you know, adding a supplement's not going to do anything if you're not already doing, you know, the lifestyle things.
For sure.
And kind of the last thing that I wanted to touch on here is, what insight can you provide based on your research, what you've seen with clients, as far as, you know, how hormonal balances impact fertility and what can somebody do if they're dealing with these issues?
Yeah, fertility is a big one because, I mean, not everybody does want kids and that's totally fine, but a lot of people do. And if you're going through hormonal imbalances, it can be scary and it can be hard to understand what you need to do to get yourself to be in the best position to be able to have kids. And so obviously in order for pregnancy to occur, hormones in the body must signal, they must regulate the growth of an egg within the ovary, then the release of the egg into the fallopian tube, and the thickening of the uterine lining for that implantation. So your body needs to be able to do all of those things. And an absence or irregular quantity of hormones can delay or even prevent any of those processes from happening, which makes pregnancy really difficult or not even able to happen. And so we really want to make sure that obviously we have our body working as a machine hormonally to be able to even let those processes occur to be able to get pregnant. And so some causes of that could be things like PCOH and ovulation, which is usually from different hormonal imbalances. Amenorrhea, like I was talking about with my own experience, which is the loss of a period. Obviously, if you don't have one, if you're not ovulating, you can't get pregnant. So again, want to make sure that the body's working more as a machine with your hormones and like is functioning as optimally as possible. And I kind of want to go through the hormones that are related to fertility and these processes that I talked about, you know, the growth of the follicle and the egg and releasing the egg and growing of the uterine lining. I want to go through those hormones first so you understand even just the processes that your body goes through, and then talk about how we can improve your hormones to improve these processes. So I'll touch on a couple of them. So FSH, which is our follicle stimulating hormone, is kind of exactly how it sounds. It's stimulating the follicle to grow. This is caused or created in the brain by the pituitary gland. So your ovaries contain follicles, which are basically little fluid-filled sacs that hold your egg. So this hormone, FSH, it triggers the growth of the ovarian follicle before we ovulate. And FSH also helps to increase the production of estradiol, which we know is crucial for our menstrual cycle and fertility. So that's kind of the first piece. Second piece is LH, which is our luteinizing hormone. This stimulates the release of the egg from the ovaries. So it really is the catalyst for ovulation. So obviously, without it, you won't really ovulate, and therefore you can't really get pregnant. So LH is super, super important in the actual ovulation process, where you're releasing that egg to be fertilized by the sperm. Then, of course, you have estrogen. So throughout your menstrual cycle, your estrogen levels naturally climb. This helps the development of the egg, and then also facilitates the release of that egg from the ovaries so it can be actually fertilized. Estrogen also facilitates pregnancy by thickening the lining of your uterus. It enables a fertilized egg to actually implant and mature. So without that process, you probably wouldn't have implantation, and therefore you wouldn't be able to necessarily get pregnant. And so if estrogen levels are too low, a woman may experience irregular periods or an ovulation where you're not actually ovulating. And if estrogen is too high, the window for egg fertilization actually can be shorter, which lessens your chance of getting pregnant. And then that brings us to progesterone, which is obviously another really big hormone for pregnancy. So during fertilization, progesterone prevents the endometrium, which is the lining of the uterus, from developing further. And this readies the uterus for implantation of the fertilized egg. So if conception does happen, progesterone levels will keep climbing. The placenta will develop and become the primary supply of progesterone throughout the pregnancy, which is crucial to supporting your pregnancy. So progesterone levels, if they are too low, they can lead to, again, irregular periods and problems getting pregnant, as well as an elevated risk of miscarriage. And so it's very important. High progesterone levels can also prevent a woman from ovulating as well. So we want to have like a good balance between all of our hormones and have them be within the specific range they should be. Too high or too low can cause infertility. And so how do we actually improve fertility health? The biggest thing that I want to say is create a safe space in your body. Your body wants to feel safe. It wants to be able to feel like it can produce your sex hormones. And basically think of your body as like rainbows and sunshine. That's where you want it to be, like all happy and really safe. So things to do for this. Number one, like I already mentioned, track your cycle. see what's going on. The more that data points you have, the better you'll be able to understand your cycle. Are you ovulating? What kind of symptoms are you having, if any at all? How long are your cycles? How long are you bleeding for? All of these things can tell you what's going on, if it's regular or if something not great is happening. So number one, track your cycles. You also want to focus on gut health. We've already kind of talked about how that is important for your overall hormonal health, but focus on gut health. Check off if there's any imbalances. So of course, if there is an imbalance, you're less likely to be fertile. So make sure that you are getting blood work done. You are making sure that your lifestyle habits are in line with managing your hormones and keeping them balanced. So make sure if there is anything, you obviously want to address that to help with your fertility. You also want to maintain a healthy weight. So you'll see a lot of people at really low body fat percentages aren't able to get pregnant because their body is not safe and they don't have the right production of hormones. And that is just due to having a really low body fat percentage. So having a healthy body weight is also really, really important for fertility. Exercising regularly is important, and also making sure you're not overtraining. Again, that can even lead to low body fat percentages, which, as I just mentioned, is not great. So making sure that you're exercising regularly, but potentially keeping it more lower impact, not always doing things like HIIT sessions or fitness classes 4 or 5 times a week, or overloading your body with training. You want to make sure that you're being smart about your training. Stress management, we've gone over that one. That one is pretty self-explanatory. You need to keep your body feeling safe. Stress makes your body not feel safe, so it does throw pretty much everything off. Also, you can do this before even wanting to have kids. You can take a prenatal to help with this process. Quality is really important with prenatals, so some things to look for if you are going to go and take a prenatal is, number one, look for third-party testing. Make sure that it is a reliable prenatal. Two, make sure that it contains some choline. This is a really, really, really important nutrient in pregnancy. You want to have at least 300 milligrams if you don't eat eggs. So also, 2 eggs a day contain half of the choline needs of your pregnancy. I know I have 2 eggs like literally every single day, so like pretty good there. But if you don't eat eggs, potentially get a supplement, or just make sure the prenatal has some choline in it. Like I said, 300 milligrams is a good range to opt for. Make sure that it includes folate, another key nutrient in pregnancy. And then fourth thing with a prenatal is look and see if it has iron or calcium, but you don't really want both because calcium can inhibit the absorption of iron. So that kind of goes against each other. So make sure it's one or the other within your prenatal. Other things to focus on for overall fertility: limiting alcohol, refined carbs, high sugar foods, which I kind of already mentioned, increasing your healthy fats. Like I said, backbone of hormones. So if you really want your hormones to be working as greatly as they can be, healthy fats are essential for your hormone health. And overall, just a balanced diet, all the things that I already mentioned, supporting blood sugar balance, supporting liver detox, supporting gut health, making sure that your diet is mostly nutrient-dense foods while also having some of that moderation in there as well.
That was an awesome breakdown. You really covered everything. And I love how you brought it back to the body needs to feel safe, because that is the biggest thing when it comes to anything in regards to our menstrual cycle, any part of it, whether it's in regards to getting a period, the health of our period, or when it comes to getting pregnant. And for my ladies that maybe you do have a pretty normal cycle and you're not having many symptoms, but you are still struggling with fertility, just based on my professional experience, one thing I will recommend you either work with your doctor on or a practitioner is getting assessed for different autoimmune conditions and just assessing the overall state of inflammation in your body. So that might look like looking at CRP, looking at different, you know, IL-6 and other inflammatory markers, because autoimmune disease, you know, can be another cause of fertility. But everything as a whole from this episode hopefully points you toward just do your best to support your body and keep advocating for yourself if you feel like something is off. That is a big theme on this podcast, is helping you understand how to advocate for yourself, maybe what labs to ask for, understand what practitioners you can trust. And that's why I have people like Julia and other coaches and RDs on this podcast, is to help you guys build that network of people that you know are super, super reliable. And I feel like Julia, this has been so helpful. I definitely learned a couple of things, and I love that you're nerding out on fertility in your own journey. So if there was one, you know, key takeaway that you would give to any woman listening to this, what would that be?
Hard to narrow this down to one. So first I would say, above all else, like we've already mentioned, make sure that what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is aligned with proper hormone health. If you have a shitty lifestyle and like you have 5 hours of sleep, you're running on stress day in and day out, like your body's not going to produce hormones at the level that they need to be. So make sure that you are consistently taking care of your body on a day-to-day basis. Another thing is going back to the advocating for yourself. If you feel something is off, go get tests done, go talk to somebody, be an advocate for yourself, especially if somebody does disregard you, because that's not uncommon in the medical field that you might say, hey, something is off. And like we already said, like maybe you do get labs, maybe they actually order them, which is not always the case. Sometimes they won't order it for you. So again, be an advocate for pushing that for yourself. But if they are, and sometimes they are normal, but you know something is off, advocate for yourself. You know your body better than anybody else, and it's very smart. It will tell you when something is off. So that would be my second point. And also, if you don't know where to start, obviously consider working with a coach, getting some help, because you might not know everything, and that's totally okay. But especially if your end goal is to get pregnant, is to optimize your fertility, you might need some extra support outside. So that'd be my last thing, is get help if you need it. It's totally okay to ask for help. Sometimes we need that.
Sometimes we do. And it keeps us out of Google rabbit holes and hours and days worth of stress. I mean, that's quite literally why we have jobs, is to help people, you know, with those things. And I'm sure we've both had coaches or practitioners throughout our journeys that have helped us. So that's a very cool part of why we do what we do. And that's why I love how much like real life experience that you have. I mean, not only with your clients, but with yourself. Like, I feel like that helps.
Oh, it definitely does. Being able to come from that place and be like, I, number one, resonate with you and I empathize with you. Like, I know what you're going through. And then also being able to say, like, I've been in this place and I have taken all these steps to get there, just gives you an extra knowledge and experience that you can take and help other people with.
Yes, exactly. I feel the same way about all of the amenorrhea, birth control, gut, sleep issues, all of that. It was not fun while it happened, but thinking about it now, I'm grateful it did, because it helps us, you know, set expectations and educate our clients. But Julia, this has been absolutely incredible. I would love for you to let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, so I am on Instagram. It's at jfay_rd. I also do have my own podcast as well. It's on Apple, Spotify. I'm also on YouTube. It is the Health Club with Julia podcast, if you want to take a listen to some of my episodes as well.
Awesome. Yes, definitely check her out. We did an episode together not too long ago, and I will drop Julia's information in the show notes so that you guys can go and give her a follow. And if you liked this episode, please let us know, share it with somebody that might also benefit, subscribe to the podcast, and feel free to reach out to either of us if you have any questions. We love talking about this stuff. Clearly, we could probably keep going literally all day, but that would be way too long of a podcast. But thank you guys so much for hanging out with us, and we'll see you soon.